I guess when I was in high school, I don't know why I did this, but I did. I shaved my eyebrows off, and nobody could tell what was wrong with my face. Everybody knew something was wrong, but nobody could. They were like, something is weird. But then I also found out what they're for.
Glad to have you joining us today for this PC Gamer podcast number 168 for Thursday, March 12th. Holy Joseph Stalin, have we got an exciting show today for you guys? I know I kind of sound like Jay Leno when I say things like that at the beginning of his show, but that guy's annoying. But seriously, though, courtesy of EA LA, the Command & Conquer team, we've got a giveaway lined up for Red Alert 3 Uprising that we'll talk about later in the podcast, giving away three copies of the expansion that came out today. We've also got our friend Stan Press on hand from Xfire for discussion of the future of competitive gaming. We're going to chat a little bit about the announcement of the CryEngine 3 from Crytek. We'll take some reader questions and share what you've been playing. But first, our all-star lineup this week includes PC Gamer hardware guru Logan Decker.
Howdy.
PC Gamer intern Josh Augustine.
Hey, hey.
PC Gamer podcast producer Andy Bauman.
What's up?
And the aforementioned Stan Press, a marketing associate for Xfire.
What's up, guys?
I want to recap real quickly that that our listeners should not shave off their eyebrows because you will not be able to shower, and because the water goes directly into your orbital sockets, and even the merest of walks, like down the block, will cause enough sweat that it'll begin to drip directly into your eyes, and it's very painful. And I know this from high school. I'm not taking any questions on it. I'm just saying, don't do it. How's that, right?
Hydroelectric grooming tips, courtesy of Logan Decker.
This is the kind of high-value advice you get from the PC Gamer podcast.
It really is.
Every week, yes.
Would you say it's highbrow advice?
Whoa!
Oh,
whoa! Did that just happen? Did it?
That was a
somebody tell me. That just happened.
That was a
wow.
It happened.
That was intense.
Speaking of high-value content, there's a little bit of MMO wrap-up news I wanted to turn over to Josh Augustine. He's our MMO specialist this week. Just a couple bullet points on Champions and EVE Online and Warhammer. What do you have to share, Josh?
EVE Online, the expansion Apocrypha, we've kind of been covering in the magazine and mentioning a bit on here, launched yesterday.
It's got wormholes.
Yes. Then there was over 40,000 people. I logged in middle of the day yesterday just to see. So, I mean, I don't know if they broke a new user record, maybe like peak hours at night or something, but it looks pretty exciting. I already have my skills queued up, so I don't have to set my alarm for 2 o'clock in the morning like some of those crazy people. Champions Online is going to be coming to PCs first, which is good news. Yeah, it's getting delayed on consoles. People think because it's more difficult to patch on consoles, but hey, anything on the PC first is good with me. And Warhammer Online, excellent news. Well, this is kind of good and bad news. Warhammer Online is shutting down 63 of their servers, which I think is excellent because when I log in to play on my server, I can't find anybody, and it's just a total ghost town. So I'm excited that they're consolidating the population so you'll actually be able to find people to group with and stuff. But it is a bummer because it obviously means, you know, subscribers aren't quite as high as they would hope.
And, yeah, getting it populated and feeling populated, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah.
Will lead to a bump.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. And also, if you've been following the Zork game coming out, that it came out that it's not an MMO. It was going to be, but now it's just a persistent online adventure game.
Yeah.
So that's kind of that's probably good because Zork MMO, I don't really understand how that would have worked. So
I can't say that the title of persistent online adventure is a really sort of grab you genre, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a persistent online adventure fan. It just seems a little, yeah. They got to come up with something else.
Those guys are hardcore, persistent online adventure fans, man.
Those fans.
Do they ever take breaks? That's the question.
Never.
Yeah, they're always solving puzzles. They're always combining Dr. Peppers with hair, cat hair.
And they take that new medication that like fighter pilots take, Provigil, you know, and they're up for weeks at a time, being persistent.
I think the most the craziest genre acronym I've ever heard of was Crimecraft. It's this shooter MMO Unreal 3 engine that's coming out later this year. But they call it a PWNS. It's PWNS, Persistent World Next Gen Shooter.
Oh dear.
It's very prominently displayed in all their press releases, and it gets kind of annoying.
But where's the G in that? Is it like Pongs?
Next Gen is hyphenated, so it doesn't count.
Oh, God.
It's in tiny 2-point type, yeah, between the N and the... Yeah.
Basically.
See, marketing like that sometimes just makes me cringe.
Yeah. I
mean, that's your industry. That's you.
No, it's not. You just got painted with that one. Oh.
Yeah. That's a facepalm right there.
I mean, yeah, it might have flown in like 2005 or something, but anyway.
Yeah.
Man, that makes me not want to ever use the word pwn again.
Yeah.
Ever.
You don't want to see something jump the shark before it even comes out, you know?
Yeah.
I think I was actually the only one to play it of our group here, but there was a pretty reasonable Left 4 Dead patch last night with some good balancing changes that the whole community was really rallying for. I was really excited to see. Got a chance to play a good round of versus last night with folks, and the main ones worth mentioning is they've buffed the smoker so that he can actually target survivors through normal infected, which was kind of a pain when you'd have a lock on with your tongue and try to pull somebody, and then the random zombie would walk in front of you and you couldn't pull them away. The tank can actually punch multiple targets right now, where before, essentially, if the survivors were grouped together and the tank took a swing, he would only collide with one of them and deal damage to one of them, even though his giant Hulk zombie fist was going through all four of them. So that's a nice addition, I guess. What's the other one? Oh, yeah. The other main one, I guess, is... they removed an exploit. Well, it was kind of an exploit, kind of a gameplay feature, a feature and a bug, one of those situations of tanking where you could let your... Basically, when you're using the tank, if you don't attack fast enough, it runs out and you lose control of it, and you could park the tank somewhere in the environment and have them sort of surprise survivors as AI, and they remove that, which is very nice because it's not really how the character is meant to be used, in my opinion. So yeah, plenty of nice updates. Had a chance to try them out last night, and the smoker definitely works better. That's the main one. Also appreciate the fact that the winning team, in terms of points between rounds and versus, they start as survivors the following round. So it's not always you're switching back and forth, and one team sort of has the advantage where they play infected every round at the beginning and whatnot. So some reasonably good changes, and glad to see Valve continuing to patch Left 4 Dead. So yeah, we wanted to revisit a question from last week a little bit about competitive gaming, since we are lucky enough to have Stan Press, a former competitive gamer himself, on hand here with us, and of course deeply involved with the competitive gaming community at Xfire. So we wanted to replay that for you guys and get your memory refreshed and get the discussion going.
Hey guys, this is Ben from Boston. I played a fair amount of PC games competitively, from Counter-Strike a few years ago to Team Fortress 2 today. I'd like to hear what you guys think about the future of competitive gaming, both in general and specifically on the PC.
All right, it's definitely an important question. I've been sort of trying to keep track of which gaming leagues are still around and what their promotions are. There's a couple years ago, I know one tried to start this thing where they had like teams and a draft and things like this. It's sort of a interesting, very dynamic scene over the past few years, and I guess I'll try and spin it over to you, Stan, get your perspective on, first of all, maybe share a little bit about your experience, what games you've competed in, and any events you've been in that are memorable, and just what your perspective is on what the scene is today and what it's sort of transitioned from in the past few years.
Where do I begin? A loaded question. So I started off playing Battlefield 2 a lot, got very good at it, and a couple of friends started playing in some teams. So they had a spot and joined up, played competitively for a little bit, and eventually moved over to a team called Team Hot. Team Hot, at that point, absolutely dominated the competitive scene for Battlefield 2 for a number of seasons. At which point, the game started to die off, moved on to Battlefield 2142, which lasted like, actually one season for competitive gaming. That's pretty short. And then moved over to Quake Wars. So my area of expertise is mostly the team-based shooters. A lot of fun. Where is pro gaming today? That's such a good question, because you have all these TV shows such as the CGS going and going under. And then you have the WCG Ultimate Gamer Show that just started last, I think it was actually Tuesday or Monday, I don't remember, on Sci-Fi Channel.
On Sci-Fi, yeah, okay.
Channel. Wow, okay.
Interesting show.
Yeah, that is a very interesting prospect because it seems to be getting a lot of attention. And it has this reality-based theme where a lot of these high-end pro gamers, actually a bunch of friends of mine even, were put into a house and they have to compete against one another and people get kicked out, leaving the last gamer to win, I think it was a $100,000 grand prize.
Holy freeholdy.
Yeah, but let me tell you, the pro gaming life is not glamorous one bit, because you have to start off by practicing pretty much 4 hours a night, five times a week. And you really have to do it for the love of competing, not so much the love of the game.
Oh, because yeah.
If you're going to play that much, you're doing it for because you want to be number one. Maybe number two or three, but...
Yeah, that's really an important distinction. I mean, how many... Like, what's the percentage of competitive gamers today and maybe 5 years ago or so when Quake and Counter-Strike were a little bigger that make it their lifestyle, can actually make a living off of it?
In the United States, very, very few. I'd say probably under... Especially in the Quake scene, I don't think anybody real in the States actually plays that seriously anymore. Mm-hmm. Or excuse me, I take that back. They still play it seriously, but competition-wise, there are not a lot of tournaments for Quake in the United States.
Okay.
Counter-Strike, a lot of leagues are still happening. SIVO has their thing going on. Cyber Athlete Amateur League, the Cal Leagues still have it going on. So there will always be a future because Counter-Strike is one of those games that people still have yet to give up. People still play that so much, and it amazes me to this day. I think on our Xfire top games, Counter-Strike Source is listed at the number four most played game on Xfire at all. So that's not going away anytime soon. But the leagues and the big tournaments for Counter-Strike are going away, especially with the folding of the Championship Gaming Series. Mm-hmm. Back me up, guys. Have you watched any of those episodes?
Oh,
I haven't actually.
No.
Nope. Can't say that I have.
Were you actually interested in watching them?
Nope.
A little bit. I mean, I've like the more I watch, like EA has like sort of a proprietary competitive thing where that does where players of Command and Conquer 3 can submit their best videos and replays, and they sort of package it together like the top five. Like I just have trouble following all the details of. And part of it is the production value, I guess, how it's broadcasted, how it's spectated. It doesn't really appeal to a mass audience. It's more for people that are big fans of the game, obviously.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's where bringing PC gaming to the spotlight in the United States is very, very difficult. Because here in America, consoles are huge. The only other country where consoles are huge pretty much in the world is just Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Everywhere else, PC dominates. Australia, all of Europe, South Korea, like StarCraft, we all know how insanely obsessed that entire country is about StarCraft.
Yeah.
You have Doritos chips that are branded with StarCraft.
That's awesome. Are they purple? I hope there's Zerg ones that are purple and like slightly more jagged. And
Yes.
I don't know.
But then you have thousands of people that show up to these events to watch two guys in booths play each other on big screens of StarCraft. I can't terribly get into that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of a big question. We come back to it. I remember talking about it a few weeks ago or with somebody. What's the missing link almost in America where people aren't interested in watching competitive gamer? What's the formula that needs to happen here for it to be successful? I mean, obviously, it's a different culture. We're more spread out. There's not as much community like net cafe gaming and LAN gaming happening.
There's a huge amount of competition among cable channels, right? We're just swamped in channels now, And there's so much to watch. There's so much high quality stuff out there. I'm wondering if you know, like the cable and the broadcasting model, it just is not useful for this kind of thing. If maybe, you know, turn matches, you know, should be distributed by a BitTorrent, like or on the web or something like that. And then, you know, there's just one site where you can go for highlights, for matches, for boards, that kind of stuff. Or is that just sort of, is it already happening? Is that just...
They already have that web content. For example, Gotfrag is one of the more popular websites that covers all sorts of professional gaming.
Yeah. Game replays is absolutely sort of one. Yeah.
And they have...
Wow, I've never seen Shoutcast. That. This is awesome.
Yep, they have Shoutcast as well. Certain leagues will have people like DJ Wheat or other less popular Shoutcasters to pretty much Shoutcast, again, whatever games they're playing.
This is awesome.
So that's
I'm looking at it right now.
Gotfrag has been around for a long, long time.
Wow. It's totally extreme and sponsored by Dr. Pepper.
It's only funny because I'm actually drinking a Dr. Pepper right now.
Which awesome. Is a quality beverage. Oh, I did not pay for that and I wish I was.
The thing about that is that there is that community that will follow professional gaming on PC online because the community is based off other pro gamers or people who are really into it. But you have to think about how many people who aren't pro gamers really care about pro gaming. Mm-hmm. Not that many. So that's where in the US, I think it's going to be an uphill battle no matter what.
I don't get it though. I mean, I'd much rather watch this. Have you ever watched football? I mean, good. Nothing is happening.
Yeah. I mean,
they just sit there, and then all of a sudden there's this like spasm of activity for 5 seconds, and then it's over. And then there's like 5 more minutes of nothing happening. I don't get it.
So when you watch Shoutcasted matches, sometimes they have streaming. It's literally nonstop action because crazy stuff is going on left and right. For example, Team Fortress 2, you're playing control points. You're fighting for those points. You lose a point. You run back. You go back and forth, back and forth. And it's interesting to watch, but in my opinion, I can't watch a football game by myself. I can't watch basketball by myself. Mm-hmm. If I have a bunch of people with me drinking beers, if you're 21 and up, and have all sorts of snacks, then I'll do it.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that may have a little bit to do with this, just that you need that social activity to go along with watching a pro gaming event.
And I guess to build on that, at least here in America, you know, console gaming tends to be a more social thing, like when you're physically in the same room with another person, than PC gaming, which is the social aspect is when everyone's on at their own home on their computer, you know,
exactly.
Doing in an MMO or something like that. That's interesting.
So here you also want to take into account that in Europe, the average work week is about 30 hours. So you have a lot more time that people can dedicate to playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries also have 3 months of the year off for holidays.
Oh.
Yeah. Asian countries, I believe, predominantly have a good chunk of their year off for holidays. And this is just also big. Correct me if I'm wrong. Please, if I'm wrong, let me know. But this is pretty popular in Europe, Asia, pretty much almost everywhere else in the world.
I think in terms of pro game, making it popular in the United States, being a fan of hockey my entire life, it's my favorite sport. There's sort of some discussion over about hockey in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years about how to make it popular again, how to sell it, how to market it. You know, Sidney Crosby has sort of gained attention as like the new Gretzky, and it's kind of, I liken that to competitive gaming where we need more people that are recognizable, that are known, that are talked about and written about in magazines and online, like Fatality, you know, mm-hmm. However you feel about him is your business kind of, but we need people that are recognizable, that are superstars that you can latch onto, that can compete against each other in big events. And that's kind of what it needs, because at this point, it's even clans are kind of just interchangeable, in my opinion. They don't really have a lot of attention for at least mainstream to medium core gamers that people don't know about, like Pandemic and other clans like that. So
somebody to bring charisma and identity, you know, mm-hmm. to the sport in the way that David Beckham, you know, is like soccer. What is this? You know,
exactly.
And now everybody knows, you know, and it's becoming more and more popular. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stan.
What I want to say is that there's very little media coverage of these teams. No one sits down and interviews a whole team to study and show off their dynamic mm-hmm. and how they interact with one another. There are very few interviews of the actual pro gamer or someone who dedicates their spare time and their full time to playing games. So you really don't have that figurehead. And unfortunately, a lot of people, as Evan alluded to, don't really fancy fatality. And that also has to do with the fact that there's this huge divide between the casual gamers and pro gamers in the U.S. Anyone else ever feel that? Share that?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a huge chasm between that. And we, you know, as a magazine, you know, we're always trying to figure out like how to bridge it. And it's really difficult because there's two entirely different sort of temperaments between them.
Certainly. Yeah. I think there's even a smaller but still significant one between hardcore gamers and sort of the diamond core gamers that are fanatical and in this like very hardcore strategy procedures and all these kind of things. But
and that might be something exclusive to the United States, where if I go to a LAN party and I'm there playing in a tournament, people are going to naturally resent me because I'm here exclusively for the tournament, not to sit there and game with everybody. But then again, not myself, but other pro gamers will get frustrated with the casual gamer because these people, the pro gamers, play so much that they'll just roll these casual gamers. So casual gamers get pissed because they're getting their asses kicked. Pro gamers are getting pissed because they're too easy. It's too easy for them to kick ass.
So that's kind of something definitely I'm curious about. I mean, I've been to a few LANs, but it's kind of my impression that LANs themselves are sort of their own almost traveling community where you see a lot of the same people, a lot of the same clans come around, obviously competing for money or sponsorship or whatever is being awarded. But I mean, what is kind of the scene in LANs right now? And is it like, is there that kind of group you're describing, like of people that just show up to play in tournaments and sort of casual players that's consistent? Or
there absolutely is. And one thing I want to point out is PDX LAN, one of my absolute favorite LANs to ever attend, even as a casual player. They rearranged their prize system to almost discourage pro teams from coming and playing and making it difficult for the casual people. So instead of offering larger prizes, and or not cash, but they would offer motherboard bundles, processors, RAM, video cards, etc. And pro teams would come in, take that, keep it for themselves, or sell it off for money. Then instead, they now reward teams that win extra raffle tickets for the giant raffle at the end. So LANs generally, if they're there for casual gaming, will try to discourage pro gamers from attending. That's what I'm noticing now. Whether that was the intention at PDX LAN, I'm not sure, but that's what it turned out, and there are less teams really focusing on the tournaments. But then you have QuakeCon. We'll have huge dollar amounts for their tournaments. Back in 07 when I played in the Quake Wars tournament, there were two teams that Team Hot sent, and the main team came in second place, winning a $16,000 prize pack. Excuse me, not prize pack, just $16 cash prize. Mm-hmm. And the first place team won $24,000. And that was just divvied up between the players. That's still a good chunk of change.
Yeah.
Then you look at the Quake players who won those kind of values just for themselves. It really depends on what events you go to. But generally, I'm seeing less and less competitive events where money's being doled out, or even prizes, any kind of prizes here in the States.
Interesting, yeah. I'd imagine there's less sponsorships happening for that kind of thing right now, but sort of a different question. What would you say are the three big competitive games right now? I'd imagine Team Fortress 2 and Call of Duty 4 have to be up there, and probably Counter-Strike.
That's actually starting to change, in my opinion, because people will go where the money is. If Counter-Strike's okay, not profitable, sure, there'll be a good audience playing it, but people like going where they can make money, where they can actually earn something. I think World of Warcraft is still fairly popular amongst the competitive community with the 2v2 and the 3v3 dueling, I think it's called. I'm not exactly sure. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Call of Duty 4 had its heyday in the professional scene for about 6 to 9 months, and that's also kind of died down. Team Fortress 2 is doing pretty well. Other leagues have a lot of teams. I'm noticing some people are picking up older games. There are a couple leagues going back to playing Battlefield 2, and people are still playing Call of Duty 2, and Dota is still huge.
When Demigod and League of Legends comes out, they'll sort of reinvigorate that Dota scene competitively.
Absolutely, and going back to the Xfire Top 10 games list, a lot of reasons that they're still playing is because, excuse me, a lot of reasons that these games are still so high on the list is because of the competitive scene. Counter-Strike Source is the fourth most popular game on Xfire, with an audience of 12.7 million gamers. Sorry, not to toot my own horn thing, but these are the numbers that we come in and we study. Warcraft 3 is number 6. Do you know anybody that still plays Warcraft 3?
Very few people, but
yeah.
Apparently. Yeah, and that's because of the Dota scene.
Mm-hmm.
Wolfenstein Enemy Territory, number 10. Again, because the competitive leagues helped foster the game's audience, and people will still buy the game because their friends play it, or they read about it and they want to get into it.
Very interesting. Cool. Well, Stan, appreciate your insight and commentary here. If you had to point people to one competitive gaming league or sort of like roundup webpage, other than Xfire, of course, what would you point folks to?
Gotfrag has generally been the main resource for competitive gaming. They're moving towards the console scene now. I'd say SIVO League, Championship Evolution Online, I think it's called. I just always called it SIVO. Cyber Evolution. Thank you. Cyber Evolution Online. It's just SIVO.com, C-E-V-O. That is probably the more popular tournament leagues to actually check out and sign up and play for and win money.
Outstanding. I play TF2 in the Team Warfare League. That's teamwarfare.com. Had a pretty good experience with it so far in 7-on-7.
Absolutely. Team Warfare, or TWL for short, is generally an entry-level league. So if you want to play for fun, casually get some people together, but play a little bit seriously, that's a very good place to start.
Do you think it's relevant that like a lot of like Asian countries and stuff play more in like internet cafes where Americans usually play at home? Or it's kind of is more of a spectator sport naturally when you have like people all around you in the internet cafes playing or something?
Well, that's a very good point, Josh. And that goes in with what I said or tried to highlight earlier, that when you watch sports, you usually watch it with friends. It's a social activity.
Yeah.
And it's really not in the U.S. just yet, because when you play in consoles, you have a couple friends with you sometimes. When you're playing on PC, you rarely have friends with you sitting right next to you. And that also has to deal with the editing and the formatting. No one really knows how to capture game footage yet and make it cool to watch.
Thanks again, Stan, for joining us. So Crytek announced yesterday that they're going to show off their new engine, CryEngine 3, at GDC next week, and actually 2 weeks from now, excuse me, at the end of March. It's kind of caught me off guard. I mean, Logan, you're mentioning, we were talking about it earlier today, that people haven't really taken advantage of CryEngine 2 yet. So what can we even expect from this? Do we want it to break our computers and send smoke into their atmosphere and destroy everything? But
I know this will be kind of a buzzkill for people, and I don't know for certain. You know, nobody knows much outside of the Crytek compound right now. But I have a feeling that the push behind CryEngine 3 is to make something that's more console friendly.
Sure.
An engine that you code once and then you can get it on any platform. But probably mainly looking at Xbox and PC. So it's probably, it's made to take advantage of console hardware while, still being scalable for PCs as well. You know, because Crytek still is at heart, a PC outfit. And, they've turned to consoles to expand their business, which, considering, things the way they are today, was probably not a bad decision, when it was made years ago. It was pretty smart, because everyone, needs as big of a market now as they can get. So I suspect that that's what's really behind it. It's an engine that's going to work as well for consoles as it does for PCs. And hopefully, that could be a net benefit for PC gamers, because now, the next engine isn't going to be such a system crusher.
Yeah, maybe it's just like a modest iteration. I don't want to call it modest, but an iteration on CryEngine 2 that's, maybe it'll work more cleanly. I mean, I don't want to interpret their press release too much, but it does say, it's the first development platform for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, MMO, DX9, DX10. I don't know if it's interesting that it doesn't mention DX11 there, but it mentions the consoles first at least. So,
yeah, I mean, even to chat about DX11 now, it's just it's so spec, you know,
Sure.
Speculative. That word sounded alien to me. I don't know why. Maybe it was whatever I ate for breakfast. But it's so speculative at this point. And people are still trying to figure out how to fully exploit DX10, you know. And then, of course, you know, you have to make sure that you can still serve everyone who's on DX9, which is still a huge number of people. But yeah, so you know, I mean, we can – it's weird. It's like the CryEngine 2 stuff. Only recently have I really been able to get anything approaching 60 frames per second with Crysis at max settings, you know, and it's years old now. That's kind of ridiculous, I have to admit, you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, when you frame it like that, for sure.
I mean, that's really ridiculous. Oh, absolutely, please.
What's interesting is that I often have this debate, PC versus console, with my friends who play console, and I'm a hardcore PC guy. Mm-hmm. So I always try to say, Crysis looks amazing. But they always come back at me, well, Crysis breaks your system. You have to have a $2,000, $3,000 PC just to play it well. Mm-hmm. So it's almost interesting because a lot of people will use Crysis as a point against PC gaming.
Yeah.
To point out that it takes so much effort and so much money to actually play a game like that.
And that's of course, we all know that it doesn't have to be that way, but they make a great point with one word, Crysis. Ah, of course, you can come back and say Crysis Warhead, you know, which worked a lot better you didn't need a $3,000 system to run it.
Oh, absolutely. They helped scale it back so you can actually run the game.
But you're absolutely right. Just that the word that we held up as being sort of this pinnacle of PC gaming, Crysis, did turn out to be it ended up tarring the brand a little bit. I hate using words like that, the brand, but you know, it did scare people away. Oh, Crysis, the system crusher. I don't have the money to play it. You know, so why don't I turn to a console? $60 a game.
It's really unfortunate because I think that rhetoric you're describing is a majority of it is a result of that kind of internet forum community culture where people say, oh, look how beautiful Crysis is. And like Stan was describing, just come back and say, well, I'm not going to pay X thousand dollars for this. And they don't have any real evidence or experience or just throwing out random comments. But it influences people when they read stuff like that. You know, it's unfortunate that people just take those kind of comments for granted and don't try things themselves, and
then it gets applied to the only platform in the world where you actually can spend all your time playing free games, you know, playing indie stuff and experimental stuff and classic games that have been released for free, you know.
Don't forget mods.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can buy one game and be playing something completely different, you know, with it years later. That's just as enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, just on a slightly different tangent, that's kind of a growing issue for me this year is DLC packages. The Call of Duty World at War multiplayer pack got announced today for console, and they said news would be forthcoming about how it's going to be distributed for PC. Just how things are monetized on console is so consistent. They want to make everything, you know, 800 Microsoft points or $10 or $5 and just nickel and dime you, but obviously they can't transfer that whole culture onto PC quite yet, so they're still figuring it out. And I just really hope we're able to sort of maintain hegemony over that history that we have of free patches and quality expansion packs, just great free content and post-release support. I mean, I guess Valve is, you could say, in some ways leading a charge on that.
Well, Valve also has the financial backing to be able to support that and give free expansions. To pay a development studio to make extra maps, that's tens of thousands of dollars, maybe even up to 50 to 100, depending on how in-depth that map pack is. Mm-hmm. The reason I know this stuff is because I live with a couple developers. They always gripe to me, oh, I got to do this, I got to make this map pack, etc., etc. And it makes sense that they want to monetize it, and that's why people love the console, because they can continue making money after the game's released, post-purchase sales.
Yep.
Whereas on PC, can't really do that just yet. And games for Windows Live, I think you'll see a lot more support for that built into games probably the next year or two.
Although, you know, PC
start making money from that.
PC does have, you know, its own history of expansion packs, you know, bigger packs that are, you know, less incremental, you know, more event focused, you know, expansion pack with 20 extra levels. So, you know, maybe we can find some sort of happy medium in between all that.
Yeah.
But we will go through this awkward phase, and it is very awkward, where a game that I just was spectacular, Tomb Raider Underworld, you know, and now the DLC isn't coming for PC yet, because I think it's just for the reason Evan was talking about. There's just like, well, I mean, we don't know how to deploy this on the PC and make the money that, you know, we know how to make on the console. And it's just really annoying, because we're sitting here going, oh, come on, this, you know, what's going on here?
And I think we'll see that backlash by the next year or two, where PC games are going to start getting that nickel and dime feeling from what's normal to console players.
Yeah.
On a 360 are used to throwing $50 on Microsoft points and downloading XBLA games or patches or additional content.
Spending $3 for a song they can only play in a video game?
Yeah. Can you imagine doing it on PC?
No.
Yeah.
Like that just infuriates me thinking about it. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens and how people feel about that in the next year.
I mean, you can definitely count on us to support that culture and really try and protect it on your guys' behalf.
Yeah.
But speaking of expansion packs, a big and interesting and exciting one, I think, coming out today is Red Alert 3 Uprising. It's a standalone expansion that's download only. Right now it's available on DirectDrive downloader. And it features 4 all new campaigns. It's sort of single player focused. There's no co-op in these campaigns, but there are new multiplayer maps. There's like sort of a dungeon crawling campaign with Yuriko, the Japanese commando that we saw. It's really interesting. It's got Ric Flair in there. It's got Malcolm McDowell in there from Dune, one of my favorite sort of B-movie actors. So really cool, exciting expansion. It's got the new Commander's Challenge mode, which is sort of a persistent achievement-based mode with 30 hours of additional gameplay, allegedly. So that's out today for $20. All right, so it just so happens our good friends at EA LA hooked us up with 3 download codes for Red Alert Uprising to give today to celebrate its release. So what I'd ask of you guys is to submit your favorite Red Alert battle, your favorite memory or character, just something that's worth sharing with other people on the podcast next week. Of course, the deadline for that would be next Thursday at noon Pacific time, the 19th. That's Thursday the 19th at noon. So send us an MP3 to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. We'd ask that you keep it short. We usually have our questions at under a minute. Hopefully you're right around there. Hopefully the battle isn't 20 minutes long or anything like that, just for the purpose of us going through them quickly. So send us an MP3 there, or you can call and send the same thing at 877-404-1337, extension 724. Again, we're looking for your best battle, your best dramatic reading of a battle or something, anything creatively that you can share about Red Alert that celebrates a series or a cool memory to share. And along those lines, I want to get your guys' input to sort of warm people up for that discussion and that conversation. If anybody has a cool memory from Red Alert to share, I know I do.
Well, I'll go ahead and start. Red Alert 3, I'll just start with the most recent one. The Mount Rushmore mission, everyone knows. It's so over the
top. Spoilers.
Yeah, sorry. Spoilers coming ahead. Like, when guns are shooting out at the faces at Mount Rushmore, like, it was so ridiculous. And then a giant alien head popped out of, I think it was Jefferson. A giant alien shot lasers out of its eyes. Like, as it blew my mind. Just when I thought it couldn't get any more ridiculous, the giant alien head busts out. It was brilliant.
The launching of bears wasn't ridiculous enough for you?
Oh, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. But it just keeps getting more ridiculous every time I play it.
I think that's a great point to highlight, because not only, I mean, the Red Alert series has a history of that kind of tongue-in-cheek, obviously, and they blew it out of proportion in Red Alert 3, but it's not just that series. It's PC gaming in general, especially all the FMV games, adventure games, MechWarrior games even, have that kind of history of B-movie actors and just kind of that poorly produced but still very fun and entertaining cutscenes and things like that. That's worth commemorating. You know, it kind of encapsulate that stuff with that tone. Yeah, Stan, go for it if you got something.
Red Alert 3 was just fun. I don't care if it wasn't serious. I had a good time playing it. You walk in knowing that it's like a cheesy movie. It's probably going to suck on some level, but you're still going to have a good time. That's the same thing with Red Alert 3. And then the women that they managed to pick for that, all the FMV sequences. Wow. Back me up, guys.
Which one's your favorite?
Gemma, the English one.
Okay.
She's a beauty.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, sure. She's in Uprising, too, so.
Oh, it's already downloaded and waiting for me at home.
Very nice.
Whoa.
But my favorite Red Alert moment, first one, as soon as you hear the Hell March start playing for the first time, get that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just this awesome bass, just awesome hard rock feel to it. It set the tone for the whole game for me. Just that one song.
It's pretty excellent. Actually, I'll post it in the comments thread when we're done. I found this, well, actually one of our listeners and our good friend Vagabond over at GameCentral.org, linked me to this YouTube video of someone playing an acoustic version of the Hellmarch theme. You might have seen it on Twitter, Stan, I don't know. But
you have that little Twitter game music battle?
Yeah, exactly. It's beautiful. Like, it perfectly captured like the tone and all the nuances of the theme, and I'll link it on the comments, so it's really cool. For my own memory, I mean, the original Command Conquer was one of my first games. I played in my uncle's basement, so it's kind of like a foundational, formational experience for me. But I think the map editor, honestly, in the original Red Alert was one of my formative gaming experiences in general, just playing the game every night when I got home from school. And then when I was at school, busting open my notebook, drawing up all these ridiculous ideas for maps and, like, how to, basically, like, it was kind of unfair, but I had fun with it. It was kind of like my own little playground, but I create these maps where I'd have a base on an island surrounded by water, and there's only a very narrow path into my base that the enemy could enter, and I create little mini islands for, like, Tesla coils to shoot them at, and it was basically a torture chamber is what I was creating, in all honesty.
So you're the one that came up with Mount Mushmore.
Yeah, basically, but, I just had so much fun creating my own maps and creating, like, resource fields that were, like, 2 miles wide and just doing all these ridiculous things. And, I mean, that's a big part of what PC gaming is and where my love of it stems from, is just customizing your experience and making it your own. It's fantastic. And of course, Red Alert 3, I mean, we've had some great times, me and Josh playing co-op, and getting back into playing multiplayer strategy games competitively has been a great experience, too.
Yeah, I'd also like to point out that any time a Tesla coil turns something into a skeleton, I still laugh out loud. It's so good.
Even the dolphins? You're cruel.
Oh, that is the best. It's so good.
And they squeal? Oh, it's terrible. All right. Well, I'm sorry Dan Stapleton isn't around today to share his Red Alert memory. I'm sure he has a fantastic one. Maybe he can provide it to us next week.
Lay it on us, Dan. What have you been playing lately?
Ah, Dawn of War 2. Love that game. Playing the Primarch difficulty in single player. That is kicking my ass. But it's fun.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't pull any punches. I mean, the boss characters in that game, or the mini-bosses, whatever you want to call them, are just so... They almost eliminate how you can utilize cover. It's so difficult, the way they throw grenades and things like that. It's rough. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I just maxed out my Cyrus character, made him cloak and throw accessories, and just do that over and over till I kill him.
Nice.
It's kind of cheap, but it works.
Hey, you do what you gotta do. And yeah, Logan, how about yourself? Probably a little bit more Peggle tonight at least, right?
Maybe. perhaps. But I finally got Fear 2 started. And I tell you, the hammerhead never, ever, ever gets old. Ever. I could go through the whole game just with the hammerhead, just launching spikes into people's foreheads. It has got that lizard brain appeal that just gets me every time.
You sir,
I feel like I'm being like I'm making crafts when I staple people to the wall. Seriously. You know, it's like interior decorating. Wow. I know that statement's going to come back to haunt me during my Senate bid, but I don't care.
I would love to see.
I would have never thought of that, but well said. Decorate.
I'd love to see HD.
Decorate. Ah! Oh, my God. Oh, get man. It? Decorate. Sorry.
I'd love to see, like, a Home Shopping Network display one of those devices and sell it to people and, like, demonstrate it.
You see chickens, like, pecking around in the backyard, and here we go. You see a couple
not
of
available
feathers.
At Home Depot. Oh,
fantastic.
Chicken not right. Included.
Josh Augustine, I know you've been playing a little bit of Duke Nukem 3D.
Yeah. I wish I could say I've been playing a lot more, or playing something besides World of Warcraft, but I really haven't. And sadly, like, I won't even get credibility with World of Warcraft people here, because I've been hooked on fishing for the past week. I've caught over 1,300 fish in World of Warcraft in the past week. It is ridiculous. I've just been putting...
Are you responsible for some endangered species at this point, like, virtually, or...
Yeah. Half the continent is just fished out now.
But, do they actually keep track of that in WoW?
Yeah, they have an achievement that takes you up to 1,000 fish, and then after that, I just noticed I have like 300 and something fish in my bags right now. So it's pretty bad. But other than that, I have been playing. I've been trying Saga. I just tried it this morning. I played it a couple hours. It is recommended in the comments. It reminds me a lot, and I'm still only going through the tutorials, so I haven't really played against other people, so I don't know how it changes. It reminds me of those old, like, browser-based games I used to play where it's like, oh, you're building a castle, and then it's like, do you want to train archers today? Then you have to log in, and it probably installs, like, 10 levels of spyware on your computer each time. But do you guys know the games I'm talking about?
No?
Okay, well, in my high school,
you
used to play them. Yeah, it's just text-based where it's like you just set up, okay, train archers today, okay. And then it's like, oh, visit the castle, then you can go on a quest. And it reminds me a lot of that type of game, which I was really into for a while, just with graphics. And so it looks interesting. I don't know, I'll have to put more time in it to see, but...
What you described sounded like a virtual game. Like, setting up actions to do if you were actually playing a game sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of meta. I mean, very arty.
It's supposed to
it's
be
avant-garde,
this,
really.
Like this MMO RTS, like collectible card game kind of thing. It's this crazy fusion of imagine playing Magic the Gathering and Battle for Middle Earth.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like you get cards, you can trade, you can buy.
Are you talking about Battleforge?
Isn't that what Saga is?
Saga does, at least that I've noticed yet, doesn't have any collectible cards. It's an RTS type thing, but I haven't seen any cards yet. I know Battleforge has the cards.
I might be confusing the two. Sorry about that.
Man, it's okay. That's kind of an evil marketing scheme. I don't know if WoW does this with its CCG, but like buying real game cards confers like certain virtual in-game benefits, and oh, that's so much lost money right there.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
So dangerous.
Oh, well, there's like this one WoW CCG card that gave you glowing footprints, and it went up for like $400 on eBay or something like that.
Good lord.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to buy some for my buddies for Christmas as like a little Christmas gift when I was living with a bunch of WoW players. And I went on eBay. It's like $100 for any of these cards. Like, I don't know. Not worth it. But
okay. So, Andy Bauman, I'm not sure if you can top fishing, but...
Yeah. The mark has been set rather high.
Yeah, I haven't got much gaming in. I'm just playing Street Fighter 4, really, which isn't on PC yet, sadly enough.
June.
Yeah, I really suck at it, and I'm hoping I can get good enough so when that comes out on PC, it's a smooth transition. I can just start, at least trying my hand at some online play.
What character are you playing as?
I started playing as Dhalsim, or I started like getting down his moveset because it's fairly... Like, he doesn't have a lot of moves, and he's kind of cool because he's all stretchy and, like, clay.
Yoga fire.
Yoga fire, exactly. And then, I just fare better with Ryu, so I'll probably just switch to Ryu.
Is it Ryu or Ryu? I've always said Ryu.
Oh, I don't know.
I've always said Ryu.
In Utah, it's Ryu.
And I'm part
In Utah, it's Ryu.
It's Ryu.
I'm oriented, so I would know.
I see.
Oh, yeah. So what is it? Ryu?
I don't know.
Well, I didn't know.
Just watch like the Street Fighter animes. They have the correct pronunciations in there.
I just like playing the race card. That's all.
Yeah, there's actually Japanese and American voice tracks for that game, right? So maybe you could test it out and see if it's any different for us.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Totally relevant to our PC audience. I'm
anyway.
Sorry.
yeah, I still need to finish Tom Ritter Underworld. which is really good still. So
isn't it? Oh, it's so beautiful. I want to go back. I do feel kind of bad. You walk around like, you know, shattering all that pottery. Oh, priceless
artifact. I feel terrible about
smashed.
That. Yeah, it's yeah. And then you like find the thing inside of it. But I'm like, what if that pottery is worth more than the thing inside of it? And you just
yeah, and you're
it.
Just like, you know, casually crunch.
And only that, you're just destroying panthers and tigers.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. Uppercutting. Oh, the last remnant of this civilization. There you go.
Uppercutting yeah. toucans and killing ancient spiders yeah. and yeah.
Not my problem.
I guess you can use the tranquilizer gun if you're really into like you,
you
know,
could, but you
nature.
Won't.
No.
Well, you might a little bit at first, but then it's just so frustrating to do it. You're like, oh, screw it.
Yeah, you or me. You know.
All right. Well, we direct you guys to PETA.com/Tomb Raider Underworld and, for their community service project. As for myself, I'm getting this weird tingling sensation where I want to play an MMO. It's probably going to be Warhammer Online.
It's a trap.
Exactly, as Akbar would say. Yeah, I might get back into it. I'm trying to pull some people in, maybe. It might be because I've started playing D&D 4th Edition with former PC Gamer Editor-in-Chief Rob Smith is dungeon mastering for us, and that's been very fun. Otherwise, Left 4 Dead TF2, kind of my usual plate of gaming stuff. All right, so that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thanks for joining us, guys. Really glad to have Stan Press on board.
Thank you for having
us
me.
This week.
Yeah,
from X-Fire.
Fantastic.
Appreciate your insight, and we'll definitely be sure to loop you in. And if folks want to check out X-Fire, which has, what's the latest count, 12 million users?
12.7.
12.7. Oh, working your way to 13. Wonderful.
Almost there.
Head on over to xfire.com. You can check out the today's top games for the minutes played on X-Fire.
What does 12 million people look like?
More than WoW.
It's a really big room.
It's like four Bay Areas, I think, or three, actually.
That's intense.
Yeah.
I think it's like a state. It's almost like New York State.
All right, and if you're inclined to submit a favorite game memory from the Red Alert franchise, which we'd encourage you to, just a reminder that where you want to submit it to is pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. You can also submit any general questions you have there for next week's podcast. And the phone number you want to call is 877-404-1337, extension 724. For the PC Gamer Podcast, I'm Evan Lottie, signing off. I should be apologizing to Andy for who has to edit my business.
It's all right. Your business is safe with me.
You're a kind gentleman, and I will appear at your wedding.
Are you getting married?
No.
Oh, okay.
I have to say congratulations.
Oh, man, this is going to be the pride of my cupboard. You know what I need to do now, though, is I need to develop some sort of poison that reacts with other people's skin, but not mine. So if anybody picks up my peggle mode, they'll instant, like, you know, in the name of the rose, ooh, spoiler alert, you know, if anybody picks up my mug, they'll instantly begin to drown in their own blood. Whereas
seems
I can
a bit
pick
overkill.
It up, and I can, I don't think so. If it were just a normal mug, you know, that would be just like a nice, quiet, peaceful death, but not my peggle mug. Did anyone else know that Ugly Betty was originally a Mexican telenovela?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Yes.
You knew that? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Whatever. You guys think you're so smart, but you're not that smart.
You no, can kind of I derive don't. That just by watching it.
I never even it's watched it.
At least very inspired by that genre, which is my favorite genre of television.
It turns out you love the most.
No, dude. Overly dramatic.
Hispanic. Oh, Jesus. What the hell was that?
I'm wrapping up my sandwich. Just.
Oh, my God. It sounds like the end of the world.
Yeah. That was actually ridiculously loud.
Seriously, it was like the apocalypse.
I have like the most sensitive mic in the world. Man.
Sounded like wet children being dropped into sizzling hot oil.
Well, I'm glad you know exactly what that sounds like.
Yeah, best of all possible worlds, really.
Now, where is it for the fucking iPhone?